Okay, so I'm going to start. Welcome to the first of Chassidus on the Parsha. Last time we had a shiur, we did it on the Rosh Hashanah, sort of preparation for Yom Nerayim. So this is the kickoff for the series on the Parsha. Hopefully before other Yom Tov and other holidays, we'll have something before them too. But in general, we're going to try every Sunday, Mirtz Hashem, to learn something about the Parsha, the upcoming Parsha, and see what the Chassidus Rebbe's had to say that can teach us and affect our lives. Now, Chassidus, in general, comes in more than one form. And what do I mean by that is that the Chassidus Rebbe's basically use the Parsha as a springboard for ideas, so that we won't be learning so much a Parsha shiur as we will be learning a shiur in about ideas of Avodas Hashem, things that will apply to our lives and inspire us, hopefully. But it will not really be a Parsha shiur. We will probably not be going into many Mefarshim, if any at all. And even if when we do occasionally, it will not, almost never be on the level of Pshat. So we're not going to be discussing necessarily events in the Parsha. Many times the figures in the Parsha will act, again, as a springboard or as a backdrop to the ideas that the Rebbes were trying to discuss. Most of the Chassidish Torahs that we have are on Chumash. And the reason is, not because the Chassidish Rebbes, again, wrote any commentary on Chumash. Most of them didn't write almost anything on the Chumash itself, but rather because they used the Chumash as a springboard, and most of them didn't write Sfarim either. Most of them just spoke, and when they spoke, it was usually at the table, at the tish, whether it was during Shalosh Shudas, or whether it was also during any of the other tishim that they would hold with the Chassidim. And because they would speak usually on Shabbos, they would start with the Parsha and go from there on into the ideas. Their Talmidim were usually the ones who wrote down the Torahs later, although we do have some Chassidish Rebbes who wrote themselves. Most of them did not. Occasionally, when we do find that the Rebbes wrote something themselves, it's interesting to see that sometimes they write something like, and this is all I remember. In other words, they would say things, basically usually whatever came to them as they were talking. They were not usually ones to prepare. There are several different Torahs from different Chassidish Rebbes about the Madrega, or the level of Kedusha and Nevuah. You know, Shechina medaberes mitoch grona, we say about Moshe that the Shechina spoke from his throat. The Chassidim aspired the same type of Kedusha to their Rebbes, that when their Rebbes spoke and said Torah, it wasn't some kind of a drasha or a prepared speech ahead of time or a lesson that they had prepared. It was something prophetic, something, a type of Ruach HaKodesh that would come to them as they would speak. So oftentimes when we do find that the Rebbe writes things, he says, I don't remember anymore, because whatever he said at the time is what he said. Whatever he remembered afterwards, he committed to writing, and sometimes we don't have, therefore, that. So a lot of times we'll see they write things like, I don't remember more of what the Rebbe said, and therefore I don't want to write more about it. We're not going to basically any specific school of Chassidus. Chassidus is divided into different schools of thought, just like there are different schools of thought and machshava in different types of hashkafa in Judaism today. In Chassidus, there were also different schools of thought. Just to give you a quick understanding of one or two differences so you get the idea of what they might be, when the Baal Shem Tov passed on and he was succeeded by the Mezritcher Magid, those were the two recognized Rebbes of all the Chassidim. After the Magid, we already find that Chassidus breaks up into more than one leader. And one of the most famous founders of a different school of Chassidus was Chabad, was Rav Shneur Zalman of Liadi, the founder of Chabad. We've all heard of Lubavitch and Chabad. And his brand and his thought of Chassidus differed in the standard way from the Baal Shem Tov and his other Talmidim. That's why it's called Chabad. It's not just called standard Chassidus. It basically focuses on Chabad, Chochmah, Bina, and Das. And it focuses on how those different spheres, those different attributes of Hashem, mainly the ones that do with the Mochin, the Moach, Chochmah, Bina, and Das, and how those things interact with our world, and how we use those as Kalim to serve Hashem better. Chassidus Chabad is extremely, extremely difficult and deep. Anybody who studied Tanya, which is sitting up there on the shelf, will know that that's just a small taste of Chabad. The other Sfarim are even more difficult and sometimes even deeper. And we will not be studying a lot of Chassidus Chabad for that reason, because it is extensive and it requires a lot of time and effort to study it and learn it. Occasionally, maybe we will mention some things from Chabad. I'm not opposed to it. But because of the amount of time and effort and review it requires, we will not be focusing mostly on Chabad. Another school of Chassidus was founded by the Talmidim of the Choyze. The Choyze from Lublin was a student of the Rebbe Reb Melech, who we will learn something from him today from Noam Melech Melech Mirtz Hashem. And he succeeded the Mezritcher Magid in Galicia. The major center of Chassidus in Galicia was headed by the Rebbe Reb Melech. The Choyze was probably the next Rebbe after him that was recognized as a leader in Galicia. And the Choyza had certain Talmidim. One of them, known as the Yiddish Kaddish from Preshischa, differed with his Rebbe. And because he differed with his Rebbe about certain concepts in Chassidus, one of them, for example, was what's the role of the Tzaddik? What's the role of the Rebbe? The traditional role of the Rebbe was to be the leader of the Chassidim, to teach them, but also to provide for them, whether it be through miracles or through teaching or through sustenance. And the Yiddish Kaddish felt that the Rebbe should be more of a mentor to guide and mold students, more like a Rebbe in like a yeshiva. And he played down miracles a lot. And the most famous school that came out of the Yiddish Kaddish was Kotsk, if you've heard of the Kotzker. And the most large Chassidus today that exists, that comes from there, is Ger, or Gur. And we will be studying some of their teachings. And in general, you will find that although different Chassidus come from different philosophies, because they all trace their roots back to the Baal Shem Tov, and his teachings are based on the Arizal, and based on the Zohar and Rav Shimon Bar Yochai, it all eventually comes back to the same place. And you will find many similarities even between the different schools of Chassidus. So that's just a quick overview. So today was the Yahrzeit of Sanhedrin Shlisrael, the advocate of the Jewish people, of Yitzhak from Berdichev. It's said about Yitzhak from Berdichev that right before the Yom Nerayim hit, he could already tell that he was going to leave the world. And Sukkot was one of his most beloved holidays. He loved the Yontif of Sukkot. And it said that he asked Hashem to hold back his Ptira, to let him stay in the world a bit longer, so that at least he could live through the Yom Nerayim and through Sukkot. And he did, and he passed away right now at Isru Chag, which would have been Isru Chag of Chutz Laretz, obviously. He lived in Chutz Laretz. And just to give you one or two quick stories about Yitzhak from Berdichev, and we learned a piece from the Torah from him in honor of his Yahrzeit that ended. But in America, it's still his Yahrzeit. In Ukraine, it's still his Yahrzeit, I think. So we can still have something to do with it. And so we were just speaking about Sukkot. So to give you an idea about the Kedusha of Rav Yitzhak from Berdichev and what Sukkot meant to him, he had a special minhag. Some rebbes have this minhag till today. I think that's the previous Satmar Rav had this minhag. No one would be able to see him when he benched, when he made a bracha on the Luvan Esrog. He would close himself up in the sukkah. No one was allowed in. After he made the bracha on the Luvan Esrog, as is traditional in many Hasidic courts today, everybody had a chance to bench with the Luvan Esrog. And the Gabbai was very upset about this. I don't know if you know, there's a Chasam Sofer. The Chasam Sofer was asked, the Esrogim, after they go through so many hands, don't look so nice anymore. You know, an Esrog is supposed to be hadar and beautiful. And remember, in Europe, to get an Esrog sometimes was like a miracle. And I once saw a tshuva, I believe it was in Tshuva Smaril, where they asked the following question. They had one Esrog for several communities. They wanted to know if they could cut the Esrog in four and divide it among the four communities, because they didn't have more than one Esrog. Surprisingly, the answer was, of course, no. But surprisingly, the reason wasn't because it's not good enough to cut the Esrog into four, because you don't have a whole Esrog. It's not a problem of chaser. He said that year Sukkot fell on Shabbos, and only for the first day is Deraisa, and therefore we don't shake Luv and Esrog Atzah Beis HaMikdash on the first day on Shabbos anyway, and therefore it wasn't a shayla of chaser. He said it was a shayla of Yavesh, because once you cut the Esrog, it will dry out. But just to give you an idea of how precious it was to get an Esrog in Europe, so one year this Gabbai said, that's it. You know, every year, every grabs the Rebbe's Luv and Esrog to make a bracha, and I'm the Gabbai, I'm always last. And by the time I get the Esrog, it looks like an Esrog Kushi. It looks very, very black and dark, and I don't like an Esrog like that. I like to have the most beautiful Esrog, just like the Rebbe does. So the Chasam Sofer was asked, is that Esrog kosher? So Chasam Sofer said, his Yahrzeit was also today. He shares the same Yahrzeit with the Berdichever. And interestingly enough, those who study this farm tell me that there are quite a few Torahs in Chasam Sofer's Torahs and Berdichever's Torahs that are almost identical. Either way, the Chasam Sofer Pask and the Psak that sounds very much like a Berdichev Psak, that not only is an Esrog that's dirty and black and dark from everybody holding it, is not only is it still kosher, it's mehuder, because there's nothing more mehuder than all the Jewish people holding and loving the mitzvahs and using an Esrog like that. Either way, this Gabbai said, that's it. This year, I'm going to be the first one, even before the Rebbe. He woke up extra, extra, extra early, because it's known the Berdichev was so inflamed. He was so excited about doing the mitzvah of Esrog that he would literally stay up almost all night.
Yeah.
Literally stay up almost all night and not go to sleep so that he could have the first moment. So this year the Gabbai said, that's it, I'm going to get up even before the Rebbe. Now the Rebbe usually stayed up all night. This year somehow the Rebbe maybe fell asleep for a few minutes. He snuck into the Rebbe's room and he opened up the Esrog box and he put his hand on the esrog. As soon as he touched the esrog, the Rebbe shouted out from the other room, "Ach, sedrik michin heart! Someone's squeezing my heart!" So he let go, and he thought it was some kind of coincidence. So he tried again. When it happened the third time, he realized that the esrog had something to do with the Rebbe's heart, and he did not bench luluv and esrog on the Rebbe's esrog that year. So the Midrash says that the esrog symbolizes the heart. Obviously, in that way, Litzlik Berdichev's esrog had some special connection to his heart. Let's learn something from Litzlik from Berdichev. It says in Kedusha Slevi about Noach. Rashi says, "Af Noach haya miktane emona, mamin ve'eno mamin." Rashi says something very, very strange about Noach. We know that the pasuk says about Noach, "Ish tzadik tamim hay b'deroisav," and Rashi brings the Chazal on the spot. Some say l'shvach, some say l'gnai, some say he was such a big tzadik, not only in his generation, all generations. Some say no, only in his generation was a tzadik. If he would have been in Avraham Avinu's generation, he wouldn't have been such a tzadik. Rashi comes and says, also, you should know about the Teva, that after Noach built the Teva, it says that he went in because of the waters of the Mabul, b'tei me'a Mabul. So Rashi writes in the spot, I am miktane emana, he didn't have such strong emuna, he waited till the water pushed him into the Teva. It's also a surprising thing to say. So the B'dichuv says like this, Eich yachol liyoze, how could that be? Hakasiv meid alav Noach tzadik tamim haya b'dereisav. It says, Noach ish tzadik tamim haya b'dereisav. It says in the Pasuk, according to the Pashup Shad, and according to the Chazal that says that it was a shvach, that it was a praise, the Noach was a tzaddik, not just a tzaddik tamim, a perfect tzaddik. So how could the Pasuk say Noach was a tzaddik, and Rashi come and say he was miktane emana, he had like little faith? Od kasha, another question asked the Berdichever, lama lo haya mispalo Noach levat al gzeira. We want to know, this is actually a question found in the Zohar HaKadosh. The Zohar wants to know, why is it that Noach did not daven? When Noach found out that there was a decree hanging over all of the entire world, all of creation, everyone, and that decree was that everything was going to be destroyed, Noach went and built a teva like Hashem told him to. But why don't we find anywhere that Noach davened to cancel it? We know that Tzadik goes to HaKadosh Baruch Hu Mekayim, and Tzadik has the power to decree things, and Hashem Kabayachol listens. Why didn't Noach daven for his generation that they should be spared? So says the Berdichev Nolavar, Kiyesh Neimini Tzadikim Shoevdim Abore. There are two types of Tzadikim. Yesh Tzadik Shoevd Abore, Ve'en Cheshek Rak Liyos Oevd Abore. Umamin Shiesh Lekoyach Beryonim Rahan Ligalvamos Kertzono. Kmosh Amru Chachmenu, Tzadik Moshe Biyosolakim, Mimoy Shal Bi Tzadik. We know that there is a type of Tzadik who serves Hashem, and he understands and knows that he has the power, like we said, that it says in Pasuk and Shmuel, Tzadik Moshe Biyosolakim, Tzadik rules over the fear of God, and the Chazal say in the Gemara in Moed Katan, Mi Moishel B'Tzad, Hashem says, who rules over me? A Tzadik. Chazal say that. And Kadosh Baruch Hu goes there, V'Tzadik Mevatel Agzer L'Toyva. Kadosh Baruch Hu can decree something, and the Tzadik has the power, Chazal say so, to somehow nullify and cancel that decree. V'yesh Tzadik Echad Sh'oived Aboyer Baruch Hu V'u Shafel Be'ene Atzma Me'od U'Me'od. But there's a different type of Tzadik. He's such an anav. He's so humble that he thinks he's not even worthy. Such a tzaddik is so lowly and so humble in his own eyes that he thinks, I could ask Hashem to change something? I can't do that. And such a tzaddik says, who am I to ask God to change his mind? Hashem decreed, so what, I'm supposed to tell him no? Who am I to do that? And such a person is so lowly and humble that he doesn't even daven to change things. It says in the Gemara, so it says in the Gemara in Sanhedrin that Nebuchadnezzar wanted to say such praises, such songs before Hashem, that it would be even more beautiful. It would put to shame the praises of David HaMelech in Tehillim. So, what does it mean, Shigina, says the Kabbalah? Mazalosh and Shigina, Lefize, Asi Shaper, but based on what we're saying, it makes sense. Nebuchadnezzar Haya Russia. Vecher Beis HaMikdash. Nebuchadnezzar was no tzaddik. He was a great Russia. He destroyed the Beis HaMikdash. Vahaya Mavchin Shat Sadikim Yechon Lahapach Midas Adin Larachman. Nebuchadnezzar knew, as a lot of our enemies know things about us, right? Nebuchadnezzar was one of those enemies that did some study on the people that he was fighting against, and he knew that we have the power among our tzaddikim to change the attribute of din of strict and harsh judgment and change it to mercy. The Nebuchadnezzar was afraid that if there would be among Klal Yisrael such a tzaddik, he would stop him. He wanted to destroy the Beis Hamikdash. That was his goal. But he knew that the Jewish people had this power to stop negative decrees. And even though he realized somehow that he would be the one, he was afraid someone would come and change that. Some tzaddik would come and ask the Beis Hamikdash should be built and prevent him. It says in Daniel that what is done among those above and those below, according to Hashem's ratzon, everything works in the world. Right? That's how Nebuchadnezzar wanted it to be. Nebuchadnezzar wanted it to be that there should be no power. Whatever Hashem says, that's what happens above and below. Nothing changes it. That's how he wanted it to be. And that's what he wanted to exist. And that's what our sages say. Al Chazal, Bikesh Nebuchadnezzar lomar shiras hizbachos, shigina shiras shel David. Ritzon lomar shiras shehu lehefech mishel David. What is it, shigina? Not only did they put David's to shame, so to speak, he wanted to say a praise of Hashem that would be the opposite of what David had said. What did David say in Tehillim? In Kuf Mem Hei, in Kapitel Kuf Mem Hei, David says, Ritzon Yirei Av Yaseh, that Hashem fulfills the will of those who fear Him. Who are those who fear Him? The Tzaddikim. Hashem fulfills their will. Whatever they desire to do, Hashem fulfills it. Based on that, what is David HaMelech saying? That Kadosh Baruch Hu listens to the Tzaddikim. If the Tzaddikim say something, Hashem listens to them. That's what David HaMelech said. Nebuchadnezzar came to say the opposite. David HaMelech came to say, Hashem Yisborach Manhig Olam HaSkiratzon HaTzaddikim, that Hashem runs the world based on how the Tzaddikim want it. And Nebuchadnezzar, HaRasha, Hayah Ritzon HaLehepech. Nebuchadnezzar wanted to say the opposite. God, you're so great, you don't even have to listen to the Tzaddikim. You're above them. That's the type of praise I'm going to offer you. V'noyach, Hagam Shehayah Tzaddik, Gadol V'tam. Even though the Pasuk tells us, it gives testimony. Noach was a tzaddik. Not only was a tzaddik, he was a tzaddik tamim. He was a perfect tzaddik. Haya katan be'enav me'od. Noach was extremely small in his own eyes. He was extremely humble to the point where he thought very little of himself. V'lohayelo emuna be'atzmo. Shehu tzaddik moshel yachol v'atal gzera. The greatest shortcoming that Noach had, and that's the lesson for all of us to take away, is that he didn't believe in himself. If Noach had that's what it means when Rashi says Noach miktane emana haya. Even Noach had little faith. He didn't have enough faith in himself. He didn't believe enough in himself and what he was capable of doing. Noach didn't believe in himself that he had the power to daven and cancel the decree. Adarabba hayachoshuv be'enev kishar hador. Noach thought himself, just like the whole generation is full of wicked people, and the world deserves to be destroyed. Probably I'm wicked too, just like they are. Why is God saving me? I don't know. Maybe I'm just a bit more meritorious than they are. V'hayachoshuv imani eyen nitzel b'teva v'ani ein tzadik yoser mishar hador. And he thought, well, listen, if God's going to save me in the Teva and I'm no better than they are, maybe God will do something else to save them in the end. Maybe they'll come around right at the end. You know, I'm building this whole Teva, maybe mamash at the last second they'll join me. Whatever Noach's thoughts exactly were, we don't know. But we do know he didn't daven for them. He didn't believe in himself enough. He didn't give himself enough credit. He was small in his own eyes. He was insignificant in his own eyes. That's what it says later in Pasuk. Hashem says, I'm going to destroy them. I'm going to do what I said. Why? Why am I going to do what I said? There isn't a tzaddik who's going to stop me. No one's stopping me, so I'm going to have to destroy the world. Therefore, what am I supposed to do? I said I decreed to destroy the world. No one's stopping me. That's what Hashem's going to do. And then it says afterwards, "Vani hinini mekim es brisi itchem." Ritzolomar af al pish ein tzaddik mispalu vatal gzer af al pikin hinini mekim es brisi itchem. And even though the tzaddik didn't daven and didn't cancel the decree, therefore I establish my covenant, my bris with you in the future generations, and that's what happened. So the Bidjiv is teaching us. Kedush Levi is saying to us an amazing teaching, something that each of us can take for ourselves. Everybody has to believe in himself. We're not all tzaddikim that we can daven to Hashem to cancel his decrees. But every person has a value that his tefillah can do. And every person has a value to their mitzvahs. The Sfarim say, and I saw today from the Yismach Yisrael, from the Alexander Rebbe, he quotes Rav Simcha Bonin from Preshischa. It's found in many sources. Rav Simcha Bonin from Preshischa used to say, every person has to have two pockets. In one pocket, he should keep the knowledge that Anoichi offer ve'efer, that like Avraham Avinu said, I'm nothing but dust and ashes. I'm lowly, I'm humble. I can't be something that I'm not. I have to be humble. On the other hand, you have to have another pocket. And in that pocket, you have to keep the message of Bishvili Nivra Ha'olam. Chazal tell us that the whole world was created for me. A person has to believe that for him was created the entire world. That's why it says in Chazal and Sanhedrin that a person Chas Shalom, who destroys another person, it's as if he destroyed an entire world. And that's what it means when we say in Chazal that a person has to see the world as if it's balanced. That if a person believes that if he does just one mitzvah, he can tip the scale and tip the balance of the scales to merit. And if Chas Shalom does something wrong, the opposite can occur. And he can tip the scales Chas Shalom to the side of Din, of Chiyuv. And that wouldn't be true if it wasn't up to me. Like, what is my action going to do already? And the answer is no, your action matters very much. Hashem values our mitzvahs and our tefillahs very, very much. And that's the power of these two sides, that when a person thinks, Anoichi offer ve'efer, he has to remember, look, on the one hand, I have to be humble. I have to be, I have to have the attribute of humility. I can't be a balgaiva. But at the same time, I have to remember that I'm worth something, that my tefillahs count for something, that my mitzvahs count for something, and Hashem wants them from me. And I have value. And that's the power of believing in yourself. And when a person lacks that, unfortunately, the whole world can be destroyed. As in the story of Noach, unfortunately. So that's one idea.